ever heard of digital currencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and buzzwords like blockchain, cryptocurrencies, and mining? Don't know what it all means or how to get started? Well, at Let's Talk Crypto, we break it all down in easy-to-understand terms and help you learn and earn in the age of cryptocurrencies. So welcome to the Let's Talk Crypto Show, brought to you by SchoolofCrypto.com with your hosts, Barry Moore and Tom Galeski.
Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Crypto, brought to you by SchoolofCrypto.com. I'm one of your hosts, Tom, and along with me is my boy, Barry. Barry, how are you feeling today, buddy?
Yeah, good, mate. Good to be here. Let's knock it out.
Yeah, excited. So today, nice little short, punchy episode about exchanges.
Yeah, in the last episode, we talked about wallets. So that's how you're going to store your cryptos, how you store your Bitcoin, your altcoins, whatever. The question we're going to answer in this episode is, how do you get your hands on some, right? So now you got your wallet ready to go and need something to put in it. For most people, they're going to get their Bitcoin off of an exchange. So we're going to talk about what they are, how to use them, and how to get started.
Okay, so Barry, what do you look for when you're selecting an exchange to buy some cryptocurrency?
Yeah, you really need to do your research here. There's a lot of different exchanges and a lot of ways to get started. So in the show notes, we'll have some of the ones we use, but I urge you to do your own research because just because it's right for us doesn't mean it's going to be right for you. So first of all, since we're both in Australia, local currency support is really important, right? So I don't want to have to take the hit of transferring Australian dollars into US dollars and then putting them into an exchange and then getting a fee to buy Bitcoin. So I want to deal in Australian dollars, and ideally I'd like to tie that to a bank account or an Australian debit card or something like that to make the trades easier. So local currency support in your country is a big one, so you're going to need to do a little bit of research there. In the show notes, we'll have all the ones that are Australia friendly and New Zealand friendly, and most of the other ones will be at least US friendly. But if you're in a country other than that, you're going to have to do a little bit of research yourself. All right. So when we're talking about exchanges, we're talking about a place where you can acquire some Bitcoin. So in the previous episode, we talked about wallets. So that's, you're going to have to set up a wallet to store that Bitcoin. But now we've got to get some Bitcoin to put in our wallet. So for most people, that's going to be through an exchange. And an exchange, as the name implies, is just somewhere you can go and trade your fiat currency or your local currency, US dollars, yen, Australian dollars, whatever, for Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. So you can think about it like those little booths at the airport, right? If you're going overseas from Australia to the US, for example, I'll rock up at my little exchange booth and I'll slap down whatever $500 of Australian and I'll ask for some US currency in return. So that's essentially what these exchanges are. They're part of the Bitcoin ecosystem, but they're not owned by Bitcoin. They're all private companies. So when you hear about Bitcoin being regulated or Bitcoin being hacked, typically they're not talking about Bitcoin itself. They're talking about the actual exchange. So that little booth at the airport might get hacked. Somebody might break in there and steal all the currency, but it's not Bitcoin being hacked. It's the exchanges being hacked, which has happened in the past. So the exchange is a place where you can go and change your money for Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. All right, so now we know what an exchange is. How do you pick one? Because there's lots. There's quite a number of exchanges out there for you to choose from, and you need to do a little bit of research on what one is right for you. In the show notes, we'll put some of the links to the ones that we use, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're right for you. Let's talk about some of the ways you would go about selecting an exchange that you want to work with. For me, one of the big things is local currency support. As I said, we're in Australia here, so I want to be able to transact in Australian dollars. I don't want to have to take the conversion hit from going to Australian dollars to US dollars so I can put US dollars into the exchange. I want to deal straight with Aussie dollars. Ideally, I would like to, you know, tie that to a bank account or a debit card or something like that, that it allows me greater flexibility for moving money in and out of the exchange. So if you're in Australia, there you are limited by kind of what exchanges will support Australian dollars and Australian customers. Same with New Zealand, for example. So again, we'll put some links to those in the show notes. But local currency support's a big one for me. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, Barry, they're all pretty much similar in regard to the process to sign up and how difficult it is. I've got a number of registrations with a number of different exchanges, not only during my journey getting involved, but obviously for our listeners, they actually to do some due diligence and some research on, you know, how easy the process is. It's like any type of system. You go to a website, it'll ask you to select a username and password, which is generally an email and a password. Now, this is important because at the end of the day, like Barry suggested, that these exchanges, a lot of them offer the ability to be linked up to a debit card or a bank account. So you need to keep this password safe. If you're like me and have multiple exchanges, don't use the same password on all the exchanges, okay, to protect yourself, because we talked about in the previous episode with wallets, You know, if your computer's compromised and there's some sort of spyware or spamware on the machine, and it logs your usernames and passwords, essentially they can log in on your behalf and have some real fun with your exchange and potentially your bank account buying cryptocurrency. So the process itself is very similar across all of them, being that, like I said, you have an email. I would recommend use a secure password and make that different to the different exchanges. Now, they also have a level of regulation. So here in Australia, and I've seen this in the US as well, you can't just go with a username and a password and set it up. That's it. They have to abide by this regulation. There's KYC, which is know your customer, and there's AML, which is the anti-money laundering laws. So Barry, do you want to talk about them? I think you've done a little bit more research than I have on these ones, but the process essentially is using a photo ID to prove that you are who you are before you can get an account established. And these are actually verified by humans. So it does take a few days to get set up on these exchanges. And my experience with both US-based, UK-based, and Australia-based, the process is identical, meaning that you do have to upload some level of ID, and then they're verified. So Barry, do you want to talk about these rules?
Yeah, so as you said, most of the exchanges will have these know your customer rules because the governments won't allow them to operate in that country. So while Bitcoin is not really regulatable in itself because there is no headquarters for Bitcoin you can kick the door in and serve subpoenas to, it's open source, it's peer-to-peer. So the actual use of Bitcoin itself is not really regulated. The governments can't say, hey, we want Bitcoin to operate this way. But what they can do is these exchanges, as I said, they're like the little booths in the airport. They're just businesses that exchange one currency for another. And that business has to be headquartered somewhere. That business has to operate somewhere. So if they're operating in the US, for example, then they're subject to US regulations. If they're operating in Australia, they're subject to Australian regulations. So a lot of these companies, if they want to deal with U.S. customers, right, they want 300 million potential U.S. customers, they've got to comply with U.S. regulations. So while Bitcoin itself is largely anonymous in that I can send money to a particular public key address and have the slightest idea who that person is, all I know is it's a big string of numbers somewhere. The governments want to stop the use of Bitcoin for money laundering and illegal activities. You know, the big public case where Bitcoin kind of got some unwanted attention was the Silk Road website that was selling, you know, illegal drugs and that kind of stuff. And the medium of exchange was Bitcoin. So it made the governments pretty toey about the anonymous nature of Bitcoin. But then again, cash is totally anonymous as well. I can take $1,000 out of an ATM and do whatever I want with it, and there's no record. So there'd be a little bit of hypocrisy there. But the long and short of it is that these exchanges are regulated by wherever they're operating, whatever their jurisdiction is. So they'll require you to identify yourself, like with a driver's license or a passport, a utility bill, a bank account statement or something like that. So the governments, should they want to, can track the money that's going into the exchange and who it's coming from, right? So if I make $50,000 a year and all of a sudden I dump $200,000 into an exchange to buy Bitcoin, that's probably going to raise some red flags somewhere in the tax system, right? So unfortunately, it can be a little bit onerous when you sign up to some of these exchanges just by the jurisdictions they're governed by. Yeah, so that's why the ease of sign up can be a sometimes frustrating experience between different exchanges. Tom, what about you? What do you look for?
Look, coming from my IT background, Barry, I really very value support. So like I said, I've probably a dozen now, I think, exchanges that I've registered to over the last few months, just experimenting and testing. And I've had to reach out to the support to see, you know, to log faults or to find out what's happened with my application. And I do have to voice my frustration. There's one here that's registered here in Australia called Cointree. Now, I'm not saying use them or don't use them. My experience of them with them was horrible. The process was fine, as in the sign up was pretty easy, meaning that I, you know, registered username, which was an email address and a password, and I did my ID verification, and all that went through really smooth. I uploaded my driver's license. I got fully authorized. That took a few days, which I thought was really good. And then the way that these guys operate, and we'll get to this, I'm sure, in more detail as we go, but there's two different ways that you can get currency into the exchange. One is you link it up to a bank account or like a debit card, so then you can buy currency on the fly and it just does the transaction. A second way is they have a bank account into which you deposit funds into, in this case, Australian dollars. That's what I've done with another exchange. So I've got money sitting in there, and then I can choose when I want to buy the cryptocurrency at that time. Now, with Cointree, I made a deposit of the money and it took 10 business days for the money to get into that account. That was super frustrating because at the time I was suffering a little bit of FOMO, which is from the early episodes, and Bitcoin was on one of its runs, just going up and up and up, and it literally cost me thousands of dollars. So I'm a little bit sour at these people, but that's just a classic example that get your ducks lined up, get approved in the exchanges, have the currency ready to go, and with the other ones that we will list in the show notes that I've deposited money into. So ability for me to buy crypto is very quick. I literally just go through, buy it now, done, it's in my wallet. So that's one of the big things, is how good their support is. I've had a couple of other experiences, and for the most part, they've been really good. But unfortunately, I was really stained with the Quantry one. So that was, yeah, really frustrating. I don't want to boycott them on the podcast, but they really, really annoyed me a lot.
So, right. I like it. All right, cool. But you touched on another point there, which was how easy is it to get money in and out? That's a big thing in the exchange as well, right? So the price of Bitcoin in particular, very volatile. It goes up a lot, goes down a lot. So you want to be able to get in and get out quickly if you're trading as opposed to investing. So Tom touched on it there. There's a big difference between how responsive you can be if, for example, like some exchanges will require you to deposit money ahead of time, right? So if I want to buy whatever, say $5,000 worth of Bitcoin, you know, I've got to take $5,000, transfer it from my bank account into the holding account at the exchange. That might take 2 days, right? And then now I've got $5,000 in there that's ready to spend on Bitcoin when I decide the price is right to buy. So let's say I buy that $5,000 and then tomorrow there's a pullback and I want to suddenly buy some more. Well, I've got no more cash on the sideline, so it's another 2 days before I can get cash into that exchange. So if you wanted to pounce and take advantage of any pullbacks and you don't have any cash sitting there on the sidelines ready to go, that can be kind of a pain. So some of the exchanges will actually allow you to tie your account to a debit card. So if I don't have any cash in my holding account, price goes down, I can just say, yep, buy $1,000 now. That'll just come straight off my debit card instantly and I can buy whenever I want. So another thing to take into account when you're choosing an exchange.
Yeah, and when we talk about the speed of money in and out, of course, that's why I got caught, and that's why I was a little bit upset, because it did cost me a bit of a run, but that's life. That's the past now. I've made my money back 10 times over. Now, we have to consider the fees. Now, this is a huge thing with all these exchanges. So with the fees, it does vary between the different exchanges, and they do change, meaning that if they charge you a percentage or a particular dollar fee, they go on a particular scale. So the more cryptocurrency you buy, the more fees that you pay. And this fee is also dynamic, meaning it changes compared to the amount of network load or the amount of demand that's existing on the network at that time. So you've got to be very, very careful that, you know, buying even $100 worth of Bitcoin, it could cost you up to $5, $6, and $7 just to make that purchase, which in real terms is 5, 6, or 7%. We have seen this in the past, especially when it's through high demand. So as you go through that process and you go buy now, it'll give you the price. We'll talk about the price in a second. But it'll show you the fee. It's usually in smaller writing. So be very, very careful when you look at that. And then when you're doing your research to make a decision on an exchange, then absolutely look at their fees page. A lot of them are transparent. I've done a full analysis on the quite a few ones that I use. I'm happy to publish that on the show notes, but they do change. So just take that with a grain of salt. Make sure you do your own research and choose the one that's right for you. Now, one of the things that outside the fees is the price of the let's just talk about Bitcoin for now. So I can buy Bitcoin from a lot of exchanges around the world, but the price actually varies not only by the location of the exchange, the currency you're dealing with, the time of the day, the demand, and it literally fluctuates between exchanges. Barry, what experiences have you had with, example, Bitcoin here in Australia?
Yeah, the price is not the price. The price you see is kind of only a suggestion, right? It's all determined by supply and demand. There's no central bank or central agency setting the price for Bitcoin. It's all supply and demand. So the exchanges will kind of set their own exchange rate. Just like if you're buying currency to go overseas, if you buy it, you know, at the booth at the airport, it's probably going to be more expensive than if you got it from the bank in town, you know, 10 or 20 kilometers away from the airport. So prices vary wildly from exchange to exchange as well. So it pays to do a little bit of homework. I've seen as much as, you know, $400 or $500 difference in the cost of a Bitcoin between exchanges. So I've got a nice little app on my phone called Bitcoin Ticker. It shows you your local currency across the top, Australian dollars, yen, euros, UK, whatever. Australian dollars. And then underneath that, there's like half a dozen, 6 or 7 different exchanges. And you can just click between the exchanges and see the difference in price. So one exchange might be selling Bitcoin for, you know, 9,300. $1,200 Australian, and another one might be selling for $9,700 Australian. So it pays to shop around a little bit as well.
Great point, Barry. And I've been caught like that a few times, wondering why. And if you look at the websites, it's all about supply and demand. So that particular exchange has more supply versus demand, and the price goes up or down. So it's something to look out for. Now, a few other little things that we sort of mentioned it through, but I think we highlight the points. And this is part of the criteria that I would use, and I did use when selecting the exchange. That's the ability, like Barry suggested, is linking it to a bank account. So I don't want to necessarily have my money sitting inside their little trust account, which is cool because it works. But I want to have an investment account that I've got linked. So I only put the money in that account, obviously, so I can trade with it. That means when I see an opportunity or a window for me to buy in, I simply just go through, buy it at that time. I check the feed to make sure it's really, really cool. And then that's done. And it just basically takes the money out of my Australian bank account, gives me my cryptocurrency into the exchange's wallet. I'm happy with that. And then obviously from there, we transfer it out to my wallet. So then it's nice and secure. So the ability to link it to a bank account is, for me, was really, really important. Looking at the fee structure, a lot of my transactions are pretty small, as in I'm buying it quite regularly to try and have a lower cost average for my Bitcoin. Super, super crucial is two-factor authentication, meaning that even for me to log into the exchange, which in most cases is linked to my bank account, is I have an SMS alert or the Google Authenticator app, which is really, really important. So it generates a random key every few minutes. Actually, it's probably less than that. And then you just type that in to make sure that you are who you are and you're logging in to that exchange quite secure. So that way, if someone did get username and password, they still could not log in on your behalf without that two-factor authentication. So that's super duper important. And I know Barry got me onto this, but recurring transactions, if that's something that's important for you, that means you can say, every day I want you to buy $100 worth, or every week I want you to buy $100 worth of this currency, and it just goes to your bank account, it pulls it out, it adds to your portfolio in the crypto world, and it will buy it at that current market price. So you don't sit there and monitor the market price and say, okay, Bitcoin, as an example, is this price today, I want to buy $100 worth. They basically take $100, they add their fee to it, and that's linked out to a bank account. So it's just a set forget strategy. It's used very commonly for dollar cost averaging. So as the price is going up, yes, you're buying at a higher price, but also as the price is coming down, you're buying more quantity for the same dollar price. So if you're in it for a long-term hold, a long-term play, like myself and Barry are for the most part, outside a little bit of trading that we do, that's a really good strategy because I've got a set budget, it's sitting in that account, and it just sits and buys on a daily basis.
Yeah, and that's in. You touched on another point there that we should probably tell the listeners about as well is, you know, while Bitcoin and the Bitcoin network is secure and hasn't been hacked in any substantial way since its inception, that's not true of the exchanges, right? Those exchanges are separate businesses. They're run by people. They're as secure as the staff of that exchange decides they're going to be as secure as. So there's no governing body that comes over and says, you've got to have this, you know, this level of security and this level of redundancy or whatever. You know, there are hundreds, thousands, millions of wallets on certain exchanges. So that's a really big honeypot for hackers. And they could potentially hack into the exchange and basically strip all the Bitcoin out of the exchange. Now that's happened. There's a big high profile case a few years back called Mt. Gox, where Mt. Gox got hacked. People had left their money on the exchange and they got wiped out. That money's just gone. Hackers got in, got millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin and got out. So it's a really good practice not to leave your money on an exchange because the exchanges could be potentially vulnerable. So unless you're going to be spending that money, you know, in the next few days, next week or two, you're better off sweeping that money out, putting it back in your own wallet and looking after your own security, where at least you know how secure your funds are. Whereas when it's on an exchange, you don't really know. So hopefully we've armed you with some evaluation criteria where you can go out, have a look at some of the different exchanges, dip your toe in the water, set up an account with a few of them, maybe transfer some money into a few of them. Just see how they fit. What, like I said before, what's a fit for us might not necessarily be a fit for you. But if you head over to the show notes, we'll have links off to a number of different exchanges you can have a look at, and we'll have a little list of the ones that we like and we use ourselves. But as always, remember, this is not financial advice. We're not financial advisors. Do your own research, form your own opinions, and only invest as much as you are prepared to lose.
All right. Well, that wraps up that episode on exchanges, and we will talk to you on the next one.
See you, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Crypto Podcast. You can find the links, show notes, and all the latest cryptocurrency news over at schoolofcrypto.com.